Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. Very excited for this Thursday. Normally, we start off the show with me just rambling about a bunch of nonsense. So I want to jump right to the exciting part, which is the return to the show of Dr. Rashad Ritchie. Rashad, how's it going?
It's good, brother. How you doing, man?
I'm good and excited today, because today I'm going to try to go on an epic quest to get a vaccine. Very excited about that, but also excited to have you here and to break down the news.
That's very good stuff, man. I'm excited for you. I'm getting my vaccine in the next few days. So I will join the train with you very soon, my friend.
That is awesome. And look, I'm excited to see you. I can see from the Twitch chat, there's only about 1,000 of your faces in the Twitch chat. So people are excited for you too. And by the way, they already know all about your new show on Twitch. But for those of you perhaps watching other platforms who don't know about it yet, tell us what it's about.
My show is about social issues, politics, policies, and we dive beyond the headline, beyond the story. We try to be very intentional about dissecting what people have said is the story or is not the story. So we go pretty deep. And we also, on occasion, when people don't cancel at the last minute, we bring the opposition view to debate me on topics on the program. And that Twitch show airs every Monday on the Twitch TYT channel, 2:15 my time, Eastern time, and 11:15 a.m. Pacific time.
Awesome. Yeah. So every week you can follow up TDR, Watching Indisputable. It's awesome. Dr. Rashad Ritchie is a debate gladiator, but unfortunately, a lot of the time he ends up standing in the Coliseum and his opponent is fleeing to Greece. So, but it's still exciting. So anyway, when they do show up, even better. So yes, lots of great stuff coming on that show as well. So thank you for being here. Thank you everybody for watching, regardless of where you're at. We're very excited to be broadcasting to you. So if you could do us a favor and like the stream, share it, that would be great. Let more people know that we're active. And as we go through this hour of news covering updates on the trial of Derek Chauvin, updates on Matt Gaetz, and exactly what it was that got investigators so interested in his sex life, we've got that for you. We've got the GOP in a Trump-like fashion trying to drain every dollar from their fans in the most emotionally manipulative way imaginable. And the GOP, or at least some in it, striking out against Marjorie Greene. We've got so much. You can send us messages and comments and questions along the way, and we'll respond as we go. But with that said, Rashad, why don't we jump into this? In the latest in the trial of Derek Chauvin, we have the testimony of Dr. Martin Tobin, a physician in pulmonary critical care and an expert in respiratory physiology. Obviously, when it comes to George Floyd, that sort of expertise is incredibly important. And so we want to find out from an expert like this, what exactly happened, what led to Floyd's death. I want to show you a bit of that testimony, and then we'll give you some more, a bit of a summary of what happened this morning. But first, here is Dr. Martin Tobin.
Have you formed an opinion to a reasonable degree of medical certainty as to what the cause is or was for the low level of oxygen in Mr. Floyd?
Yes, I have.
Would you tell us what that is?
The cause of the low level of oxygen was shallow breathing, small breaths, small tidal volumes, shallow breaths that weren't able to carry the air through his lungs down to the essential areas of the lungs that get oxygen into the blood and get rid of the carbon dioxide. That's the alveoli at the bottom of the lung.
Now look, it's great to have the detail, to have an expert testifying about this, and in even greater detail, which we'll turn to in a second. But of course, it also I don't know, Rashad, like stings to have to hear experts tell us what we already know and have known for a year, hoping that maybe if we have a doctor who looks like that telling us very specific granular details about it, then maybe more people will accept that, yes, kneeling on someone's neck for 9 minutes possibly can kill them. So hopefully it works, but what did you think about the testimony so far?
Great irony, especially with that expert and all of the experts, even the police supervisors, John, that have testified and said, okay, it's not company policy what he did, regardless of what anyone may say. It is not something that we teach at the academy. And what you saw on tape, what you saw recorded, is actually what happened. It was a murder. This medical expert had to literally spell out in detail what led to the death of something. We all saw it. It shouldn't be this hard, but here's why it's this hard, John. And this is the challenge. This is the enigma of the criminal justice system. Is this hard because cops enjoy a level of immunity in their own profession? They're not held to a higher standard of accountability. They're held to a lower standard of accountability because they have what's called a subjective standard rather than an objective standard. So if a cop says, in his own mind, he was in fear for his life, regardless of a reasonable person's estimation of that. If he says subjectively, I felt that I was in danger of my life, courts have typically allowed that cop to get away with murder. You and I don't have that. Everyone watching us, they wouldn't have that. Everybody else, they only enjoy what's called an objective standard. If they kill someone, that means if a reasonable person would have done the same thing in that situation, but cops have this immunity. And that, John, is different than any other profession. Medical doctors are held to a higher standard of care. Psychiatrists are held to a higher standard of care. Educators, professors are held to a higher standard of care. And the industry that's not held to a higher standard of care, but a lower standard of care are police officers, and that's the problem.
Yeah, and even though, like reasonably, if we're saying, hey, what is your subjective evaluation of how much threat to your life there was? We need to understand that they are answering that question with a subjective fear of going to prison. So maybe they'll lie, maybe they'll exaggerate, or maybe they're trained to be terrified constantly of everything they see, everything that moves, particularly from certain demographic groups. So yeah, that is 100% true. Now I want to give you a little bit more information from Dr. Martin Tobin. He testified that the main forces that led to Floyd's fatal shallow breaths, and this is a response to him watching the video of it. He said Floyd lying prone, Floyd being handcuffed, Floyd having a knee on his neck, and Floyd having a knee on his back and side. While showing a computer rendering of the arrest of the court, Tobin explained that the handcuffs combined with Floyd's placement on the ground created something of a vise on Floyd's left side, making it virtually impossible for him to get air into the left side of his chest. Tobin noted that Floyd was pushing on the pavement and the squad car with his fingers and knuckles, trying to lift his chest in order to breathe. To most people, this doesn't look terribly significant, but to a physiologist, this is extraordinarily significant, he says, because this tells you he has used up his resources and he is now literally trying to breathe with his fingers and knuckles. And that is just devastating to hear. And to think that possibly all that needed to be done for him to still be alive is for Chauvin to have gotten off of him. That's it. To have been a reasonable human. Just like the lowest possible expectation of not wanting to jeopardize a person's life. If he had complied with that, based on what we're seeing here, based on what the experts are saying, he would be alive.
Yeah, and obviously this cop, Derek Chauvin, and the other cops, they are emotionally bankrupt. They are morally corrupt. And that's why it's important for police agencies to engage in the practice of psychological evaluation every 6 months. Right now, for the vast majority, over 98% of police agencies in America, you only get a psychological evaluation one time in your entire career, unless there's a dispute, unless there's a criminal allegation or something else happens later in your career. They should be routine, John, because we know the same cop that gets hired may not be the same cop mentally a year later or 2 years later. They need to be constantly evaluated.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when I don't think it's unreasonable to say that the process of training they go through would result in some strange ways of thinking about what their job and obligation are, way of thinking about the people that they're going to be around, a person who is reasonably sane pre-training might have shades of something completely subversive and dangerous afterward and should totally be taken into account. Now, yeah. Really fast, I just wanted to get your response to, it's a related topic, but qualified immunity. We had New York removing it. I just saw today, I believe New Mexico getting rid of it. These are, I mean, entire state doing it. That seems pretty significant. What do you think about that? Do you think it's gonna spread?
Yeah, it's definitely going to spread. Big ups to New York for being the first state to literally just get rid of it totally. Georgia has something very similar that was part of a ballot initiative where voters got to vote. Now remember, Georgia is still considered to be a Republican state, even though Democrats now represent them in the US Senate. It still has a Republican governor, lieutenant governor, secretary of state, etc. Labor commissioner, the whole nine, right? Legislature. But the voters got an opportunity to vote on this, and they said, let's get rid of qualified immunity. But the bill doesn't go far enough. It just basically says that a Superior Court judge can at will set aside this immunity for government workers, including police officers. So it's not a blanket like New York, but it chips away at this ridiculous immunity clause that has been associated and affiliated with people in policing.
Yeah, that's such a weird version. It's like, okay, yeah. You don't have qualified immunity except if the judge thinks that you qualify for this immunity.
Yep.
That's weird. Anyway, I'm not an expert, obviously. I'm not a lawyer. That's why we bring people like you on to give us your expertise as you continue to learn and train.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
you must unlearn what you have learned.
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
We are slowly learning more about the lurid history of Matt Gaetz and how this investigation into him began. Again, always giving the caveat, maybe he didn't do anything. Let's just put that out there. But here is apparently how it began. Federal investigators are looking into a Bahamas trip that Matt Gaetz allegedly took in late 2018 or early 2019 as part of an inquiry into whether the Florida representative violated sex trafficking laws. This is what multiple sources told CBS News. Gaetz was on a trip with a marijuana entrepreneur and hand surgeon named, why do they have to say that he's a hand surgeon? Named Jason Pirozzolo, who allegedly paid for the travel expenses, accommodations, and female escorts. Investigators are trying to determine if the escorts were illegally trafficked across state or international lines for the purpose of sex with the congressman. Investigators also want to know if Gaetz was accepting paid escorts in exchange for political access or legislative favors, the sources said. So look, it is one thing for all of what we heard about Florida and all of that. If he is potentially having other people pay for escorts, while those people have things that they want done legislatively by the congressman, I mean, that is the most textbook corruption that I can imagine. And the idea that it's not good enough that you do that, you also do it internationally, and you don't even just take the raw money, you know, like an old school politician, you're getting sex for it, which I guess is also what old school politicians would have done. So maybe Matt Gaetz is more of an old school politician than I thought. And again, all allegations being investigated. We don't know if any of it is true, but also look at his face. Rashad, your thoughts?
by the way that fella's hairstyle is developed, you can tell he probably traffics underage children. The way this guy, the smugness of this
Rashad, I'm
just saying, funny, man. But okay. The reality is, Matt Gaetz looked like a guilty individual on the Tucker Carlson show by trying to throw Tucker Carlson under the bus. And then he tried to throw Tucker's wife under the bus. Tucker had to say, I don't know what you're talking about. I have no context for that. Of course, you know what he's talking about, right? Bottom line, this guy had a friend that he engaged with, according to a lot of the circumstantial evidence. This friend, Greenberg, got arrested. He was indicted, for sex trafficking and a few other crimes. And that's when Matt Gaetz saw the writing on the wall and started to lobby the Trump administration to somehow get a blanket preemptive pardon, right? If you're lobbying for a pardon, just think about this, John. If you're trying to get a blanket preemptive pardon, that means you're guilty of something, right? No one does that, and they're not guilty of anything at all. And he tried to manipulate the Trump administration and made up a bunch of lies about Democrats and the left-wing media and everybody coming after him. But it was really about the investigation of his friend, because he knew his friend was likely going to snitch on him.
Yeah, and this is, it's a lot of stuff. And again, as we've said 1,000 times, all of it might be fake or made up. Maybe it's the deep state, maybe Satan works at the DOJ. Maybe it's just an extortion thing rather than potentially an extortion thing based on actual crimes that were committed, which is, I've always felt, the best time to extort someone, when they've broken the law. But anyway, we don't know. But we do have a few more details on this. In a July 2018 podcast, that marijuana entrepreneur and hand surgeon, Pirozzolo, told ganjapreneur.com that Gaetz was working to introduce federal legislation that would boost medical research of cannabis. Now look, if Gaetz just wanted to boost medical research into cannabis, I think that's a laudable goal. I think they should do that. But if he's doing that because this guy that like has a business around marijuana is taking him across international lines and bringing escorts with, just the trip alone is highly suspicious, let alone the escorts too. And we know that this guy has donated to Gaetz. He gave him two separate donations of $1,000 in March 2016 and May 2017. Now look, I personally think those sorts of donations are corruption. We've said that consistently here for years at this network. But obviously, that's the most normal and legal thing in the world to do, that sort of donation when you have a specific thing you want. But anyway, it doesn't look great. Again, it might not go anywhere, because maybe he didn't do anything, or it might not go anywhere because politicians get away with a lot of illegal shady stuff. We may be stuck with Gaetz for a very long time, but more and more is coming out, and it is hard to believe that he is 100% innocent with all of this sort of circumstantial stuff floating around out there.
Yeah, I concur. And if he took this trip to the Bahamas, John, and there was a lobbying operation going on, that violates a litany of other laws that are set in place to make sure there's transparency between what lobbyists are doing as it relates to lawmakers. If this is not reported as a lobbying feat, that will also become a statutory violation and another charge in the future.
Yeah. And we'll see. I hope that if something is going to come of this, I hope that it comes soon, because we've seen how this goes generally. Like, you know, when you drag things out with an investigation, sometimes, you know, people move on. Like even us, what's going on with Cuomo right now? I don't know, there's an investigation, I guess in a month or 6 months we'll know something. Or maybe they'll be fine. Maybe everyone will have moved on and they'll get away with everything. Maybe Cuomo and Gaetz can have a party sometime off in the Bahamas. Anyway. Yeah. Okay, we're gonna move on to other news in just 1 second. I did see a comment in Twitch saying, when are you guys gonna talk about the Chauvin trial? Dude, we just talked about it. Like, that was the topic before this one that we talked about. Anyway, but we will continue to talk about it. It is an important story, obviously. That said, let's jump into this next one. Earlier this week, the New York Times revealed one of the ways that Donald Trump has conned his supporters. And that was that his fundraising emails, or even things in response to people giving money to his campaign, were at least shady and dishonest, in that they would have all of these different check boxes that started off checked, that if you didn't uncheck, would mean that you would give the same donation at sort of recurring intervals, maybe every week, or that you would give $100 at a specific additional date. And some of his followers ended up being billed for $7,000, $8,000, $9,000 in just a month as a result of this. It was incredibly shady. And in the end, Donald Trump had to give back something like over $100 million. We'll have more specific numbers later. But we wondered, would this result in anything? Would Trump get in any trouble? Would his followers learn from this? Or would other Republicans learn from this? And so far, that's the only one we have evidence for, because it turns out other Republican groups have been doing the same thing. Take a look at this from the National Republican Campaign Committee's WinRed donation page. When you donate, it has a checkbox. We need to know we haven't lost you to the radical left. If you uncheck this box, we will have to tell Trump you're a defector and sided with the Dems. Check this box and we can win back the House and get Trump to run in 2024. But if it's checked, your donation, whatever it is that you gave, $1, $20, $1,000, will become a monthly recurring donation. That is so manipulative, Rashad, that they're gonna go, hey, Sally didn't give an extra $20, she's a defector, and Trump's gonna like put down his Diet Coke and say, I knew I couldn't trust Sally. God, how fake and manipulative. None of it's true, by the way. Right. None of that would happen. But they're putting the fear of God into people who worship him as if he were God.
Yeah, and that's what it is. Their God is Trump. And remember, this is the guy who's founder of Trump University. Right. Mm-hmm. So the founder of Trump University is utilizing similar tactics, and his team, his surrogates, are utilizing similar tactics in order to get money from people. One of the saddest stories, John, was an older individual, a senior citizen in hospice care. The senior citizen made a contribution, was unaware that the contribution was recurring. The bank account got depleted 100%. Depleted. Oh. The account went into the negative. This person is in hospice care, needs the money to pay the bills. Found out because the bills were starting to come back unpaid. Here's why this is happening, though. Okay. This is happening because manipulators like these individuals you're talking about, they understand something about a Trump supporter. I gotta say it. I'm keeping it 100. Trump supporters are typically gullible. That's real. They have an assumption that a Trump supporter is gullible to a narrative that's rooted in conspiracy theory with no evidence. And so they can create an entire story based on a paragraph in an email, provide no context, no evidence whatsoever, no sourcing of the data, and people will fall for it because they assume that if you are still to this day a Trump supporter, you are in fact gullible, and shame on them for taking advantage of people and their genuine beliefs and simply using it to extract money from them. And hopefully some people wake up from it, but I doubt it. They didn't wake up when Steve Bannon stole a bunch of money from them and said he was going to build a wall.
It's like they reach into your pocket and they take out your money, and then they go to reach into your other pocket. The average Trump supporter is just like, where's this thing going? Like, no, they're robbing you. Why won't you wake up? Trump University was like 30 years ago. Yeah. Oh God, but no, they're doing it. And one added level of how messed up this is, even though it's the level I care least about, is Trump has already tried to stop them from using his image. Now they're pretending they're having like harsh conversations with him about defectors. No, they're not. Stop lying. Now look, doing something that Trump doesn't like, that's not gonna put you in a lot of trouble with me, but it's just a little bit more dishonesty. I don't know what comes next. Octo Squiddies in the chat says, unchecking this box automatically registers you as an official Antifa member. Maybe that's next.
that seems like the next obvious email that will come.
Yeah, I don't know. But just in case, I don't know if it needs to be said, but Shane Goldmacher at the New York Times points out, it seems highly unlikely that any such list of defectors would ever actually be presented to Mr. Trump. Yeah, that's true. And they've been using this for a long time in other ways. So you might see on Facebook, if you have ever given to Donald Trump, they constantly would have ads for, we're about to present a list of supporters to Trump. Make sure your name is on the list. That's just a more positive version of this.
Right.
There was no list. No, he was never shown like a long list of names like Santa. And he just looks at, yes, good to see that Rob gave to me. That doesn't happen. Like, give to a politician because you support their agenda and you think it will help them to win an election or whatever. Or give because it gives you a personal feeling of investment in politics. Do that. Don't do it because you're gonna get some sort of personal relationship with them. I've given to Bernie. Bernie doesn't know who I am. He doesn't care. I met Bernie after years of covering him. I don't think he knew who I was then. He certainly isn't gonna know because I give $27. That's not why. And I know that people watching this are obviously far less gullible than the people who would be like won over by this. But I feel for these people too. Like Rashad pointed out, these are people who very often cannot afford to give this extra money.
Right.
And the idea that they would be targeted, and the only people targeted for this are those who have already given. That's the thing.
Right.
It's not just random bet less. You already gave and they want more. They are vampires draining, sucking them dry.
Sucking them dry. And you gotta understand the methodology, John. They are coming after individuals as if Donald Trump is their cult leader. Mm-hmm. And they're utilizing this cult leader methodology by saying, if you don't do this, we're not talking about politics or policy, but if you don't give money, we're going to let the cult leader know that. Mm-hmm. And once the cult leader knows that, you're on his bad list, you're on his naughty list, right? It's not about policy, it's not about pushing an agenda, it's literally about pushing a person. And that is the quintessential definition of a cult leader. It's all about the personality of the leader and not what they actually support, represent, or the values they maintain.
Yeah. Now, I want to give the response to this. With the news out now that Trump and the National Republicans are using this trick where they try to guilt you into giving recurring donations or guilt you into checking a box, because most of the time they don't even know that that will result in giving hundreds or thousands of additional dollars. What do they have to say for themselves? Well, the NRCC spokesperson Michael McAdams says the NRCC employs the same standards that are accepted and utilized by Democrats and Republicans across the digital fundraising ecosystem, which I don't think is true. But if it was true, that's not good either. Helen Kala, the DCCC spokeswoman, says, unlike the NRCC, we use clear language and confirm with our grassroots supporters that they would like to set up a recurring monthly donation. I can't say for sure if that's true. I don't know. I haven't seen an instance like these yellow boxes from the Democrats, but I certainly don't accept on faith that they don't or wouldn't do anything like this.
Right.
This is the most egregious sort of manipulative tactic. But if you've ever been on a list from a politician or a group, they send hyperbolic emails 10 times a day. Every single thing that happens in American politics is a reason that you have to give right now. That's not as bad as this, but it's not good either. It is still manipulation and I don't like it.
Yeah, I concur. Anytime you get on these lists, man, you're gonna get bombarded by emails. But I will say this, if a Democrat or Democrats in general exercised this rule that the Trump people are doing or exercise this method, we would call it out. Mm-hmm. We will call it out. Other leaders in the progressive movement would call it out. It would not be universally accepted by silence, is my point. And I think that's a big distinction that really creates contrast between the Trump movement and everybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, look, let me give you one more of these. This is, according to our producer, this is what the WinRed page looks like right now if you donate. Although apparently the person that did this donated zero because that's what's at the bottom of the box. April 30th is our most critical fundraising deadline yet. Why? You just lost two like Senate runoffs. Wasn't that more? The general election didn't go well for you guys. Were you not raising money for that? No, April's go time. You know, that critical moment a year and a half before the midterms. Anyway, April 30th is our most critical fundraising deadline yet. The DNC is raising millions from their elite mega donors to beat us. So we need you to double your donation right now. The Dems want you to uncheck this box and abandon President Trump, but we know you won't. That is just like, that is a Facebook post. People say you won't send this to 10 of your followers, but I know you will, or whatever. It's so manipulative. At least there in the box, they talk about doubling the donation. That's the most honest thing I've seen.
But John, you know what this reminds me of, man? You remember those damn CDs we used to buy back in the day when we could actually buy CDs, right?
And all of a sudden, the clubs send you one every month?
That's right. And if you didn't like uncheck something, you ended up with 100 CDs that you really didn't want. That's what this reminds me of. It's the CD scam all over again.
Yep. I needed to identify some plants, and so I use this app. It gives you a free trial for a week where you can take a picture, identify a plant. It's amazing, actually. And they're like, if you don't cancel by this date, we're gonna charge you the $20 yearly fee. And they got me, I forgot. But that's fine. I at least used it, I don't know. I once randomly saw a charge on my like credit card for like $5 from Xbox. And I saw that and I was like, man, I haven't had an Xbox in like 2 years, but I'd been paying for it. So
the whole time, brother, because you didn't uncheck something. Yes.
Because I didn't cancel it at least.
Yeah.
So that's on me. But don't let this be on you, especially if you desperately need that money.
That's right.
Joe Manchin is, and I hate to put it this way, the ultimate tease. Because for weeks he had talked about like, oh, hey, maybe I'll do something about the filibuster. You know, like I'm not gonna totally get rid of it, but like, maybe we can make them talk or something. Maybe we can make the filibuster look, you know, like kind of like the filibuster. But no, now apparently he's doubling back down. He's not going to do anything about it. And he is going to explain himself in a way that's even more frustrating than that headline version. So here is a little bit of his op-ed from the Washington Post. He says, and this is getting into a few different aspects of why our politics doesn't work anymore. He says, it's no accident that a state as small as West Virginia has the same number of senators as California or Texas. It goes to the heart of what representative government is all about. The founding fathers understood that the challenges facing a rural or small state would always be very different from a more populous state. Designating each state with the same number of senators, regardless of the population, ensured that rural and small states and the Americans who live in them would always have a seat at the table. Well, look, to be clear, it ensures that they always have the exact same seat at the table, and that I, living in California, am worth like 1/80th what a person who lives in the smallest state is worth. If you want to explain why that makes sense, do so specifically. Again, just like Tucker Carlson yesterday, Joe Manchin being very vague about that right there. And by the way, with it being no accident that those small rural states have the same political representation as the bigger ones, you're right that it's no accident, but you're missing a bit of the historical context. Slavery was a bit of a part of that. They wanted to protect that, and he is just totally leaving that out here. But he goes on to say the filibuster is a critical tool to protecting that input in our democratic form of government. There is no circumstance in which I will vote to eliminate or weaken the filibuster, even by making them actually filibuster. The time has come to end these political games and to usher a new era of bipartisanship where we find common ground on the major policy debates facing our nation. I have thoughts on that, but Rashad, what do you think so far?
Obviously, President Manchin holds all the keys here. And I say that intentionally, is as if Joe Biden is completely powerless against the Manchin effect. I think it's a ridiculous op-ed. I did read that op-ed as well. We have real lives in the balance here, okay? Mm-hmm. It is time for Democrats, I'm talking about all of them, to launch a real campaign in Manchin state to show how he's hurting his own citizens that elected him. You have to make the case. Messaging is something that Democrats have failed on routinely. Republicans are much better at messaging, especially messaging around a lie. But Joe Manchin, this guy should not hold the keys to this. The filibuster in utilization has been exercised in order to keep black people down. It was exercised and used to keep Jim Crow a reality in this country. It has its historical connections to that of racism in this country. Imagine it's protecting it, but you don't have enough Democrats calling him out and saying this is what it is and launching a holistic campaign against him for doing so.
I 100% agree. It's bad enough to like pretend that the filibuster is this mythological thing that they've pretended for decades that it is, and pretend that you don't get what it's been used for. I mean, we covered a study. It's like fully half of all the legislation that has been stopped under unified government with civil rights legislation over the past 100 years. That is what it is about. But we just ended multiple weeks of national dialogue about that. So you don't get to pretend that you don't know that, Joe Manchin. You know that and you're protecting it. Either despite that or hell, maybe because of it. You know? Maybe. Yeah.
He loves it. You gotta wear it. You gotta make him wear it. And that's the thing, man. Democrats are typically right on message. Okay? They're just wrong on messaging. And they tend to try to water down their own legislation. I mean, even with the infrastructure bill or the America's Jobs Bill, I don't know what they're calling it today. That was a watered down version of the initial intent. And you didn't even get to the space. Right, already watered down. And you didn't even let them water it down. You just watered it down before it got to that space. Manchin is one of these cats. He is going to continue to uphold progress in this country. And isn't it sad that in a democracy where you elected a guy with more votes than any other person running for president in his history, he beats an incumbent, he wins the electoral college and the popular vote. There's this progressive agenda that pushed the excitement for his campaign. Because let's be clear, nobody was excited to vote for Biden, okay? They weren't excited, but they were excited to vote against the policies of Donald Trump and the personality of Donald Trump. You get in office, and you tell me you can't do anything? There's nothing you can do because of Joe freaking Manchin? Come on, man. Unacceptable.
Seriously. Yeah, and his cover is unacceptable.
Right.
I want to like we have some other stuff I want to move on to for Joe Manchin, but I got to go back to a couple of the things that he just said. Because they're so stupid that I have to think that if stupid is the thing we're talking about, it's either that he's stupider than he could possibly be. He doesn't seem that dumb. Then he must think that I am. When he says the time has come to end these political games and to usher a new era of bipartisanship where we find common ground on the major policy debates facing our nation. Oh, that's a good point, Senator. Follow-up question, how? How are you gonna do that? Because you don't say in your op-ed how you're gonna do that. How are we gonna have bipartisanship with these senators who say nothing will pass, literally nothing? And it doesn't matter. We have bipartisanship on the policy. Republicans and Democrats liked the stimulus bill. Republicans and Democrats like the jobs bill, the infrastructure bill. There is no debate about that. The only lack of bipartisanship is in the Senate. And you're the one empowering it, Joe Manchin, by making it able to stop all legislation. We already agree. We've done the persuasion. Biden ran on these things. We talked about these things. Republicans like them. It's Republican politicians that don't. There's no end to the political games. There's no new bipartisanship in the Senate. It's not gonna happen. They don't raise money off of giving Dem senators wins. That's not how American politics works. And that is not suddenly gonna change. It was stupid when Biden implied it during the campaign. It's dumber now after the Republicans tried to steal the election. Not a single Republican voted on the COVID aid bill during a pandemic. You think they're gonna vote to like make voting more? He says in that op-ed that we need to pass something common sense, like our voting bill to enshrine voting rights. They're never gonna do that, ever, ever, ever. There's hundreds of bills in America right now doing the exact opposite. How stupid are you, or how stupid do you think we are that you think they're gonna turn around and suddenly support literally any of this or any other bill I can think of? The Equality Act, maternity leave, nothing is going to pass until we get rid of the filibuster. And Joe Manchin is either so stupid that he cannot continue to serve in the Senate until he gets that, or he knows it and he's lying to us about what's gonna happen. And he is perfectly willing to watch two more years go by where the Dems get nothing done, then they lose the majority and likely lose the next presidential election. And we get to go through 4 years of Tucker Carlson or Marjorie Greene as president doing whatever they want. God, I'm so sick of stupid lying Democrats.
Brother, you are preaching the gospel truth. You said a lot of profound things there, John. One of the most profound to me is the fact that there is bipartisan support for this legislation. There is bipartisan support for getting rid of the filibuster. Over 70% of Americans would like to either get rid of the filibuster or they would like to see it significantly restricted. Yes. In its use, the vast majority of Americans are for a new criminal reform bill, criminal justice reform bill. Over 90% of Americans are for some level of criminal justice reform. We're talking about bipartisanship as it relates to the electorate, as it relates to the electorate. And once again, as you pointed out, the only body in the gridlock of severe tribalism in politics is that of the Senate. Even the House has bipartisan support for much of this, but not the Senate. This is not anti-bipartisanship when you provide the correct context. The context is clear. Americans, fair thinking, independent thinking Americans, they want to see things get done.
Yeah. What do the American people have to do? Like, the polls aren't enough. You know, giving the Dems the House 2 years ago isn't enough. Giving them the presidency in November isn't enough. Giving them 2 Georgia Senate seats at the same time isn't enough. What do the American people need to do to convince the country, Joe Manchin, our media, that we are not a center right country?
Yeah.
We know what we want. We're telling you what we want. You just won't hear it because you apparently don't like it.
Here's what has to happen. At some point, Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi and other leaders in the party, they will have to launch significant campaigns against members of their own party. That has to happen, okay? I know they like to play respectability politics, many of them. Joe Biden, President Biden himself is an institutionalist. He thinks the president should not do certain things. He thinks the president should not be involved in certain things, but he's going to have to change that leadership style in order to get things done in this country. It is a sad, sad affair. When you have all of this control, you have nobody to blame but Democrats, and you're expecting to win re-election. You're expecting to have a successful midterm. You're expecting for people to come back and support you like before. That's not going to happen. America has already given you the tools you need to make this work. Joe Manchin is not a transformational character. He's not a transformational politician. He's not a guy who really believes that bipartisanship will prevail. He believes none of that. But in order for you to get a Joe Manchin to either vote the right way or somebody else in that position to do so, you have to play transactional politics with this cat. Either make it impossible for him to continue down this road and be politically popular in his state, or you launch a campaign to make sure at some point in the near future, he knows he will be primaried out. You don't really have to convince him that he will lose a general election, convince him that he will never lose a, never win a Democratic primary in his life. That's how you get Manchin on board.
You're 100% right. Yeah. Yeah, and in particular, if he wants to be the champion fighting the filibuster, then you know, who is it? Obama pointed out that it was you know, Jim Crow 2.0, and that's the filibuster is ensuring it. Okay, well, you know what? Obama's an incredibly popular politician, a great leader. And Joe Manchin is trying to help the Republicans continue to pick away at your legacy and stop Biden from doing anything, the dude that you chose to be your vice president. Obama should say, I am going to spend the next 4 years or whatever raising money for this primary, and I'm gonna find the perfect candidate, and I'm gonna move to his state and campaign every day. That's what he should do. And
that
a lot of other people do, activists
and
do.
And brother, that would work. It would absolutely work. Manchin would know he's not going to survive a Democratic primary. And for him, that's everything. Because if he doesn't survive the primary, he doesn't get to run for re-election anyway. Totally. And I know people will push back on that and they will say, well, here's the thing. A new Democrat cannot win in a general election because his state wants basically a moderate Democrat. Well, that's not the issue. The issue is you get a chance at Manchin being a transactional guy saying, oh hell, they coming for me for real this time. And yes. I'm not going to be able to survive a primary. I need to adjust my politics on this. Once again, he's not a transformational character. He doesn't really believe in any of this stuff. He thinks he's playing the partisan and political line that his supporters believe in.
Agreed. Every once in a while, we like to touch base with what got us to the point where we're at in the pandemic, how that first year went, and what people were saying along the way. Because although we did as much as we could last year to make sure that people knew who was being responsible in media, who was not, who was encouraging their fans to die of a fatal illness, and who was not, there's continual rewriting. So let's go back today to 1 year ago, in fact, April 7th, a conversation on Fox News between Tucker Carlson and Brit Hume. Take a look at what Brit Hume had to say about the virus a couple of weeks into the state lockdowns.
Projections. So the question should be raised, you know, was this the right call? And is it really true that the reason that we're beginning to think we may have turned the corner on this because we all did what the doctors said we should do? Or is it because the disease turned out not to be quite as dangerous as we thought? And we're going to be debating that, I think, Tucker, for a long time to come.
Well, look, Rashad, he was kind of right there. Fox has spent about a year saying that the virus isn't as deadly as we think, even as it killed more than a half a million people. But there, just a couple of weeks into the lockdowns, they were trying to say, sure, the numbers are going down after the lockdowns, but that's not because of the lockdowns. So they're pretty much pointless. And that is a message that they largely all agreed on and continued month after month after that.
I'm mad that they're still calling this guy the senior political analyst. That's what I'm upset about. He continues to disappoint. And remember, a lot of the narrative of this was created or at least echoed by Fox News itself. So when they say things like, well, we're going to continue to debate this forever, right? On Fox News, right? Yep. That's where the real debate was happening. And they, for a period of a few years, they became the de facto propaganda ministry of Donald J. Trump. And you saw it every day. As soon as Trump would tweet something, that was the marching order given to them, their commentary and their narrative. You saw a few breakaway at the end of Trump's presidency, but that was all about trying to survive a post-Trump era in media.
Yeah, 100% agreed. Watch every time I watch one of these early clips, I just get so angry because they were so wrong. And yep. we knew that there was a very good reason to believe they were wrong about so much of this early on. But we're now a year later, and has there been a single apology, a single recognition that, like, yeah, man, 500,000 plus people died? We're way past 500,000 now, but
right.
No. Has media, Rashad, you have more experience with media than me. Has the media ever been as wrong as Fox News was about the pandemic and as consequentially wrong as they were?
No, because this was literally stories about life and death, right? So you don't get, there's no higher consequence than that. And then the lie was repeated. So absolutely not. But remember, anytime Fox News or one of the hosts on Fox News have been sued for misrepresenting the truth, for bashing a company that did not deserve to be bashed because they were completely fabricating the reality of that country, they went to court and their defense was literally, oh, no reasonable person would actually think that we're delivering news, right? That was the actual defense of the Fox News host. So, right, you have a lot of unreasonable people that watch your program. That's what you're saying in your own defense.
You're 100% right. And in fact, I want to show another clip that's going to demonstrate that. So we know that Republicans believe a lot of crazy things about the pandemic, but it's not always clear why they started believing these specific crazy things. But we have another pandemic throwback for you. And in this, Tucker Carlson and Brit Hume are going to talk about the elevated death count. Now, remember, this is a couple of weeks. We're gonna be showing you for April 7th, 2020, a couple weeks into the pandemic, the American version where we had some lockdowns, we still had relatively low deaths there. And they were already claiming that the number was fake. So you're gonna see one of the earliest claims about that. And then remember, it just continued for a full year, leading to a significant chunk of all Republicans across the country thinking that the insanely high number now is in fact fake. But here is that early video.
We had it, so we missed those, and they should be in the coronavirus death count and so on. But there's another side to this. Dr. Birx said tonight during the briefing at the White House that all deaths from anyone who died with coronavirus is counted as if the person died from coronavirus. Now, we all know that isn't true. I remember my own doctor telling me at one point when I was discussing prostate issues, he said about prostate cancer. I didn't have it as it happened, but he said, you know, a lot more people die with it than die from it. That's a real possibility that people who have this disease, particularly there are lots of people who are asymptomatic who may have other terrible diseases. And if everybody's being automatically classified, if they're found to have COVID-19 as a COVID-19 death, we're going to get a very large number of deaths that way. And we're probably not going to have an accurate count of what the real death total is.
And there may be reasons that people seek an inaccurate death count, but we can address that later.
I really appreciate your clarity.
I'm not accusing anybody, Dr. Birx
and Fauci are doing that, but I think that's they're working on what they had.
I'm not accusing them of that at all.
Right.
No, but when journalists
it's delicious. It is exactly what we were talking about yesterday on the show. It is Tucker Carlson's cowardice perfectly demonstrated. And there may be some reason some people want the numbers to be inflated. Oh no, I'm not accusing anybody in particular. I'm not saying it. I'm just saying it over and over and over again, so you believe it, but I'm not saying it in a way that can get me sued someday. I'm not saying anyone's doing it. I'm just saying people are doing it, and it's totally fake, and you totally shouldn't trust it, but I'm not saying anything. What a coward. Just do the Alex Jones thing. Just say it's made up. Actually own up to the conspiracies that you're spreading on TV right then.
Yeah, and what's interesting about their misunderstanding of how the numbers are counted, you will never get 100% accuracy as it relates to any set of data. You hope to get 90%, 85% complete accuracy, but it's the nature of data. So you have a decision to make, John. Then the decision is, do you say, okay, this is not related to COVID, even though we really have some ambiguity here because of some other complications? Or we can say, listen, this person has some other complications, but definitely COVID made their complications worse. And if it had not been, this is called the but for qualifier.
Yeah.
If it was not but for them having COVID, they would likely be alive today. And that was the premise utilized by healthcare professionals. It was the but for method, the but for qualifier. And that number is a high number. And here's what they can't debate, John. They can't debate that the number isn't extreme. So they may say, oh, it's not 500,000. Okay, well, what is it? 400,000? 300,000? Whatever it is, it's too damn high. And people are dying more so by this than they died in major world wars. That should be a problem.
Indisputable. Just like
this show. Indisputable. Just like this show.
Indisputable, yeah. Yeah, but no, it's probably just like the flu, though. And by the way, like one of the convenient things for them about having this be the debate that was going on is we're debating things that might be making the number seem too high, but we already know there's tons of stuff that's making the number lower than it actually is. The excess death count from early months of the pandemic, we covered that at the time, and we can never know for sure how many of those people died from COVID, but a ton of extra people were dying alone at their homes. It wasn't from like a suspiciously timed uptick in throat cancer.
Right.
It was during a pandemic, during the opening months of it, but they weren't talking about that. So they like to pretend that this is just about accurate mathematics. That's all we care about. Then why are you only talking about one side of this? And the side that you have less data on.
Yeah, they do this routinely, and you're right. There were a lot of people, especially in black and brown communities, brother, that died from COVID-19 and it never got recorded that it was actually a COVID-19 death. But this is something routine in the Republican playbook. What they would do is try to make a thing that's not a thing the thing to talk about. It's kind of like Matt Gaetz saying that he's being extorted, when the whole thing is not about extortion. The whole thing is about the fact he's under investigation for trafficking a minor. That's what this is about. Right? Even if he was extorted. Well, it sounds like if you were extorted, it's because there's some there, but that's not why the investigation started.
Yeah. By the way, this is a rough analogy, but Real Burner on Twitch says, did Jesus die with or from cross? Yeah, I mean, technically, I guess he would die of the cross, but it was important.
It was anyway. Important. There you go.
Yes, that's a good point. Okay, really fast, let's roll into our last quick little video before we close this thing out. Sorry, it's always difficult on the director when I do a quick turnaround like that. News broke this morning that Marjorie Greene had raised something like $3 million in the first quarter of this year, which means there's a lot of people who think like her around the country. So that's horrifying. Now, what's gonna be done about that? Will she eventually be defeated? Well, if she is, it's probably not gonna be in the general election because she's in a very red district. But there are some Republicans that hope to beat her in a primary. So here is one group, Republicans for Accountability, with one of their early ads targeting Marjorie Greene in anticipation of a primary challenge.
The following is what Marjorie Taylor Greene stands for, according to Marjorie Taylor Greene. Matt Gaetz, who is currently under investigation for having sex with a minor.
So I've been outspoken and I've said I stand with Matt Gaetz.
Harassing teenagers that are survivors of school mass shootings.
And you are using your lobby and the kids to try to take away my Second Amendment rights. You don't have anything to say for yourself?
The QAnon conspiracy.
Q is a patriot.
The 9/11 conspiracy.
It's odd, there's never any evidence shown for a plane in the Pentagon.
And using violence to overturn America's presidential election.
You can't allow it to just transfer power peacefully and allow Joe Biden to become our president.
Because of all the immoral, un-American things Marjorie Taylor Greene stands for, we don't stand with her. Sign the pledge to never support Marjorie Taylor Greene at accountability.gop.
Yeah, so they're pointing out that Marjorie Greene has talked about Q being a patriot, that she is one of literally the only two people in government right now really speaking out in support of Matt Gaetz. And there's so much besides with the Jewish space lasers and the approving of Nancy Pelosi being shot in the head. The question though is, Rashad, is this the sort of thing that if you repeat enough Republicans are gonna be bothered by it?
Nope. They will not beat Marjorie Taylor Greene with this kind of messaging. It seems to make sense, right? You highlight the perceived negatives that a candidate or an elected member of Congress has engaged in. You highlight it, commercialize it, produce it, and you repeat it. You have messaging, right? But she campaigned on everything that's in this commercial. And she won the Republican primary in a solidly Republican district. Here's what is likely going to have to happen. Either A, they find someone who can dismantle her from within, or B, they convince individuals, Democrats, because in Georgia, you don't have to register as a Democrat or Republican. You can vote in any primary you choose. They're gonna have to launch a campaign to get Democrats to jump into the Republican primary and primary her out. That is the chess move, because you will not get rid of Greene based on the same things she campaigned on to get elected in the first place in that district.
Are you saying that they should run a Democrat against her? Or are you saying Democrats should weigh in and choose a different Republican in the primary?
Well, they gotta run a Democrat, and a Democrat will run against her for sure. But they, in order to really put the nail in this coffin with Greene, you're gonna have to coordinate people to jump into Republican primaries that normally would not be in that Republican primary and vote her out.
Yeah. Yeah, look, so look, I like the ad because I think that it's important that people know how crazy some of our politicians are, but I don't like the ad just because I think that'll do it. The Republicans will hate that stuff. No, the Republicans love
they that loved stuff. It. And she literally campaigned on all of that foolishness. It almost becomes a de facto campaign ad for her to the base that elected her in the first place.
Yeah, and like she campaigned on it, but since she got into office, she's been even more like full-throated in all of her insanity. By the way, there was a question related to this in Twitch. Dragon Penny asked, Dr. Ritchie, did you look into Marcus Flowers? He's running against Marjorie Greene. I don't know if you're familiar with that candidate.
Yeah, I'm gonna have more information about that on Monday. I did look into it because it was brought up on my Twitch show last Monday. But yeah, first of all, anybody is better than her. But you definitely want to make sure that they're supporting the policies and values to the degree that you would like them to.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know, but great advice there from Rashad. These ads, I just don't think it's going to do it. I think it plays into her. I appreciate it. I appreciate the truth getting out there, but it's not going to take her down.
Yeah.
In any event, Rashad, always glad to have you on the show.
Glad to be here,
the audience. went insane for it too. You know, until the next time and until Monday on your show, where can people see your work?
They can see me on the Twitch channel, obviously, every Monday on TYT Twitch. And that's 2:15 p.m. Eastern time, 11:15 a.m. Pacific time. And you can always follow me on social media at @Rashad_Richie. That's the gram and Twitter at @RASHAD_RICHEY. Thank you, brother. I appreciate the time, man. Always fun.
Thank you, as always. Glad to have you on. Have a good one. We're just a few months into the Biden administration, and I'm already worried for a number of different reasons about the various ways the Democrats might botch the whole thing and then end up losing the midterms. History says there's a good chance they're gonna do so no matter what happens. But I wanna focus today on a particular way that they may sort of needlessly own goal themselves and not appeal to a group that has delivered for them in election after election recently. And we are joined once again to talk about this. Very lucky to be joined by the author of Teal Bernie and a senior advisor for Bernie Sanders for president 2020 and 2016. Chuck Rocha returns to the show. Chuck, how's it going?
Good to be here.
Good to be here. So I'm very glad to have you here. I mean, so you wrote an op-ed recently. And you talked there about something that we've had a few conversations about, which is Democratic outreach to Latino voters. We've now had a few months. We're still quite a ways off from the midterms, but are you already getting a little bit nervous about this area?
I am, and I'm getting nervous because you already see Republicans running Spanish language ads in places like Nevada, where we have to defend a Latina who serves in the US Congress right now, Catherine Cortez Mastos. I also get nervous because I am worried that every time these elections happen, they talk about, they being the Democrats and even progressives at that matter, that they're gonna prioritize the Latino vote and work early. And so I have yet to see that. Yes, it is still early, but I have seen more conversations. Am I worried? Yes. Am I optimistic? Also, yes, but I worry that we're fighting against history, which is your point. At no time has a incumbency in the presidency, which is controlled by the Democrats, ever led to picking up seats in the House and the Senate. And what really worries me, and I said this in the op-ed, is in the Senate and House races in particular, they run through states and districts with heavy Latino populations.
So the history doesn't look great, but what you just pointed out, the fact that this is where a lot of these races are gonna be held, that is an opportunity though, right? Because we saw in the last election, the last few elections, that this community has, they've come out, they've been politically engaged. What I'm wondering about is, we've already had one big piece of legislation, the COVID aid bill that has passed. Now we have the infrastructure bill. Are you seeing the success they've already had in passing one, or the ramp up to the second being advertised as things that Latino voters should be excited about or interested in?
Well, Latino voters are very excited about COVID relief. When we went out and talked to 1,500 Latinos as part of this research, the number one issue was COVID relief. So Democrats, good job, you knocked that out of the ballpark. But only if you go to those districts and own the issue and say, you delivered this, you're the ones who did. And also say, every Republican voted against sending you this check. We should be a lot better at ringing our own bell, at blowing our own horn, and telling working class Americans, especially working class Latinos, that you are the reason they got this check. And as we transfer into infrastructure, saying we're the ones wanting to fix your roads and bridges and give you access to the internet, while Republicans are against that. Democrats need to get a lot tougher. I talk about this all the time. As a dirt road Democrat from East Texas, a Latino, a Mexican redneck, you got to get out there in front of the Republicans and go, this is your brain and this is your brain on Republicans.
That's pretty good. So look, those are some things that they should be talking about. They should be campaigning on. You were talking there about the fact that Republicans are already running some Spanish language ads. What are they choosing to focus on so far?
This will be shocking, but they are tying the senator in Nevada to Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and the liberal left. Like, this is just, you could wind the dial up and pull the string. It's gonna say the same thing every time. But if you get out in front of working class folks and go, those folks just sent you a check. These folks over here all voted against sending you a check. These folks over here wanna fix your roads and bridges. These folks over here are just worried about their rich donors. I just see it time and time again. And in the last election cycle, we ran one ad after another talking about pre-existing conditions, bland ads. Let's put real stories of real people in English and in Spanish on TV, on the radio, on digital, saying what those checks mean to them. My son, who's a single father, who has twin four-year-olds, the two prettiest little roacher boys you've ever seen, which are my grandsons, just got $7,000. $7,000, his income tax plus his COVID relief, that was a big boost for him. And guess what? That's $7,000 less dollars that old daddy over here has to give him. So it even helped me, and I ain't in the bracket.
And so that's obviously a great aid to that family. And you know, you can, that's thousands of times over, hundreds of thousands of times over. But as you said, they have to make sure that people know it was them that delivered on it, that Republicans opposed it, because it's probably too early to see this in the Spanish language ads. But there have been a couple instances, Chuck, where Republicans have tried to pretend that they supported it. Senator Johnson like was talking about how great some of it was. Madison Cawthorn was talking about money coming back to his district. They voted against it. Do you think that if the Democrats don't stake a claim on these successes, do you think that you might see some of that attempting to like hoodwink Latino voters about who's actually brought this money home?
Yep, and you can see that now if you start watching some of these special elections that's going to happen in the next few months. The Texas 6th congressional district, where Republican congressman died of COVID, there's going to be a special election there May 1st, a runoff on May the 25th. There's a special election in New Mexico 1. All these places have big Latino populations. Watch the messaging coming out of both parties there, because it's a precursor of what's going to happen in November.
And by the way, in a special election where it is happening because the person died of COVID, they have to understand where the different parties stand on COVID and COVID aid. There's no excuse to not.
And I'll just throw in, we're running against the wife of the deceased member of Congress.
Yeah. So look, that obviously is, that's difficult. You know, a lot of people like have lost family. I've lost family. It's difficult. That does complicate things. But there was one other topic I wanted to talk to you about, and that is that we are seeing legislation being introduced in state houses across the country and passed in some, including Georgia, to try to make it so that certain sorts of people, black and brown people, have a harder time voting. Is that something that you think the Democrats should focus on as an issue, the sort of standing to protect democracy in some of these states?
I do. I see it as winning election across the board. When you're talking about the right to vote, it's a Democrat, not a Republican, not independent. It's a good issue to get on, and it's one that we should be championing at every turn.
Any other advice for Democrats on what they can be doing to try to appeal to this community this far out, not wait until the last couple of months before the midterms?
Own the positive, call out the hate and the deceit on the other side, make them own it. Do not be scared to get out and be tough. And when I mean tough, that does not mean disrespectful, but Americans are hurting, and they're hurting because they just went through a year of COVID where a lot of people lost their job. They're wondering about where their healthcare is going to come from. Get out there and own your victories. Listen. Own your victories and listen to these real stories, then we can win.
I think that's great advice. And really, for the Democrats' sake, I hope they deliver. I hope that they're listening. If you are listening to this and you want to read the op-ed, it's available at the New York Times right now. Look for It's Not Too Early to Start Courting Latino Voters. As always, Chuck, really appreciate you taking time out of your very busy schedule to join us.
Appreciate you.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.